My name's Andrew Whittleson, and I'm here today to give a cheekily titled talk called From Zero to Hero, Recommended Practices for Training Your Ever-Evolving SRE Teams. But when I first came up with the talk, I came up with the alternate title first, which was, how can I strap a jetpack to my newbies while keeping everyone up to speed? Maybe that's the more appropriate title. Why don't we go ahead and get started? Here's how this is going to play out. First of all, I'd love to get your questions as we go. So as you are well aware by this point, we have some microphones ready to go. We'll start off with a little bit about me. I'm sure you're thrilled. Then we'll go into grokking SRE the painful way, aka an anti-pattern, anti-practice. Then we'll talk a little bit about why learning matters in this crazy thing that we do. And we'll also go over some tips that I have that have worked well at Google for SRE on reliable training of our new reliability engineers. And as I said, we'll take your questions, okay? I'm not gonna put you through the whole post-lunch, let's get up and stretch thing, because that's a conference cliche, but feel free to do that if you still want to. Everyone will laugh. Okay, so there we go, Rick is brave. So extended hello world, folks. Like I said, my name's Andrew. I've been on the web search SRE team at Google for a while now, it turns out, and they haven't fired me yet. Anyone here kind of half remember Latin? No? Okay. Any half approximation at what this says? I know it's on the tip of your tongue. It says search and rescue, or some horrible approximation thereof. So anyway, I've been a search SRE since 2007 and went on call promptly for it in 2008, handling all different aspects of web search, serving, results mixing, denial of service attacks, everything in between, caching, load balancing, blah, blah, blah. But it's been a lot of fun. I'm also the tech lead within Google for search abuse and search anti-scraping in our serving stack. So if you've ever gotten a CAPTCHA, I hate you. No, I mean, I hate the people around you. I mean, the robots around you. I'm in charge of crushing the hopes and dreams of robots. And fun fact, I was at one point on call for the largest denial of service attack against Google in company history. But I'm proud and or shocked and or sad to say that we've since blown that out of the water a bajillion times. Come at me. Anyway. So my computer's not working. What's okay. Also, if you're into splashy fluff pieces, we have a great article about yours truly up on the Google student blog about SRE in my hyperbole-laden sense, and you can read more about that. I'll just Bing it or something, whatever it is. Okay, so but here's a part about me for why I'm really here. So it turns out that by hook or by crook and by a lot of sweat and tears, I became known as an educational leader at Google specifically for SRE. It's an important thing to me. And so when the next newest person came in after me, I threw myself at their feet and said, let me teach you everything I've barely learned so far. And it kind of became a thing. And then it became bigger and bigger and bigger. So I teach a bunch of classes at Google, 20 or 30 of them that are in my arsenal. Some of them have such fun and cheeky titles as how to reverse engineer a production service that you've never seen before, which is fun. We pretend that an entire Google team has gone on a ski trip and died in an avalanche. And yeah, and so then you have to take over the service and keep it running and figure out what's plugged into. As Douglas Adams would say, you need to discover the fundamental interconnectedness of things. And we learn about a specific Google service and also a class that I teach here with my colleague Jan, who's in the audience, called Failure and You. You never want to get an email in your inbox that says, you've been scheduled for failure and you. But I'm not HR, so it's cool. And I'm also very excited to say that because of all of these shenanigans that I've partaken in over the years at Google, I've now been blessed by the VP of SRE at Google to start a whole team that's doing a hands-on global curriculum for orienting all of our Noogler, as we call ourselves, new Googler, SREs in the weirding ways of production engineering. And pretty exciting stuff. So we get to inspire and train up a bunch of folks. So, okay then, let's go on to the meat of the talk, shall we? First, grokking SRE the painful way. So let me just be honest with you. When I started at Google in SRE, I hated it. What? Where is he going with this? No, I absolutely hated it. It was one of these things where we've all been there with SRE teams. Sometimes you're on the top of your game, you're more proactive, you're doing consults with developers, you're helping system architect, you're making sure that things are going to launch and be the biggest non-event technically of the year, right? And other times, your pager's blowing up, you're reactive all of the time, you're drowning in whatever, and here you are in the deep end of the pool. It just so happened that at the time when I started at Google on the search team, we were more of that second category. We learned from it, but what ends up happening, kind of the, I don't want to say lazy, but let's call it the lazy way of training your newbies is just to say, here, kid, jump in the end of the pool. Like, here's a bajillion tickets, go figure it out. Because in many cases, if you were forged in that fire, you became very resistant to things. You can look at something you've never seen before and you can say, that's fine, I can deal with that, because that's how I've done every single other thing that I've ever learned ever in SRE. And it's not like you can just crack open a textbook on SRE and be like, oh, here on page 56, it tells me how to do my job, right? So if you were not trained by just throwing yourself in and then like 3 months later or whatever, you're like, I know Kung Fu, right? No, for the last time, you don't. then you're going to maybe accidentally do that to your next set of noobs. And this just begets and begets and begets. There has to be a better way. In fact, there are multiple. Practically any way is better than that way. But it's a thing that many of us have seen. So let's talk a little bit about why learning matters, just to kind of put things in perspective. For newbies, trust and confidence. If you start out at a company and you have to learn this SRE thing, right? And it's new and it's shiny and it's hella intimidating and the learning curve is like this, imposter syndrome kicks in, right? How did I get here? What am I doing? What sort of progress am I making? Do my coworkers trust me? Well, I can't believe they just handed me the keys to the route to the castle. You know, pseudo destroy my stack. Oops. Right? They want to be trusted because, after all, as an SRE team, you become a band of brothers and sisters, right? You are, to overuse the phrase, in the trenches with them in the reactive times. You are there to make the principled and practiced calls on design architecture in proactive times. So for newbies, learning is important because it means that they can see that they're improving. This is perhaps an obvious thing to state, but I cannot state it enough. And not only do they say, huh, they might actually trust me. They didn't make a mistake. And I can prove this to them. They were wrong when they hired me, but I can prove this to them. But also having confidence, right? If you think about the race to on-call, and maybe race is not the right term, but if you think about the progression to on-call, you don't want to be dragged across the finish line. Like your manager or your tech lead or some senior SRE comes to you and says, I put you in the last authorization group. You now have no choice. You start getting pages tomorrow. No, right? What you want instead is, I think I'm mostly there, and I know there are things I don't know, but let me just glide over this finish line, or really the start line to on call, and let's try this out, right? You want to be in more of that situation than in the like, no, can I just watch some more training videos for a few more months? Let me go, right? So trust and confidence are very important, and having a learning environment, and of course, enables that. You also want the newbies to earn their sense of ownership of the stack or the pipeline or the infrastructure or whatever it is that you are on call for and that you are generally the guardians to. Earning that ownership, again, comes from that sense of progression, that sense of progress that you've made, right? And speed and trajectory. It's going to take me how long to master this thing? When I started at Google, the expectation was because of the vast myriad of different systems that collectively were connected to form web search, that it would take 9 months to get trained up before you could take your first page. 8 if you were a frickin' genius. I took 9 months. We now do it in 3. And it's because of the way we've re-architected how we learn. But knowing how long it takes or where you are in that process, either as a newbie or as a mentor to the newbie or the manager of the newbie, like, are they learning? If you have a completely scatterbrained non-design for how people learn, then you can't really audit that at any point. And it's demoralizing for the newbie, and it's a matter of like, well, I don't know what's going on for everyone else. SRE is ultimately learned on the job. Because as we said, there is no book. You know, there is no, you know, SRE for dummies. So given all of this, we really, really, really need a great learning environment for this. But perhaps some of these things are super obvious. Let's flip this around the other way. So for people who are already on call, for people who are senior, for people who are experienced or pretend to be, for your stack, right? You have to keep up to date. SRE go where the action is. So if you're on call for a stack that's completely dormant and makes no changes, that's a waste of SRE's time. So given then that you're working on a stack that must obviously be constantly changing, that is iterating, there are launches, there are new features, there are systems that are interdependent on it that we're connecting to, staying abreast of what's going on is also super important. Just because you at one time knew everything when you went on call doesn't mean that you should still be if you don't keep up. Okay, so keeping sharp, keeping up to date, all of these things, right? And staying invested. Another thing too that is dangerous is, and we talk about pager fatigue, like you get completely bombarded with alerts and so forth, and you just start mentally blocking out what's going on, right? It doesn't have to be like that. The other danger can be, well, I think I know what's going on, but you become detached from the team. You become detached from what's happening. You're no longer critically thinking about things. This can happen on the other side of things too. Like if a system becomes mostly a solved system and you rarely get paged for it anymore, how do you really know what's going on? And then the next time the big thing hits, you've been caught with the realization that you don't actually know how to fix it because you've gone soft, right? So all of those things are important to consider as far as why we need to be educating ourselves, learning, and constantly thinking about our systems, right? Ultimately, also, if you're on call for something, that doesn't mean you're an expert for it, but you could still become one. We talk about, you know, breadth and depth expertise. In the arc of a newbie SRE's experience, you want them to go broad pretty quickly because your system is going to have lots of different components, other sister and brother systems that they interconnect with, maybe other people are on call for. But you need to have a passing understanding, like a architectural diagram understanding of things first, right? But then you can still keep learning and you can go deep on something. You can become the domain authority on some of the components in your system. So all of these things are important, whether you're new or you're on call, or both. Okay, so with that then, can I answer any questions for folks before we continue on to some tips for reliable training? We've got some microphones up here and there. Everyone's just like, oh, hey, we have a plant in the audience. Your check's in the mail. Hello there. Please state your name and where you're from.
I'm Ben from LinkedIn.
Hey, Ben from LinkedIn.
So you guys have a rather large SRE organization. So I'm going to guess you onboard, you know, let's say double digits of SREs in a given month.
That seems like a reasonable guess.
Sure. We don't necessarily do that. So having a class every week or month, it doesn't really fit that.
Sure.
Do you have any other approaches besides actually trying to like bring the new people in together in a class when they're in their still new period?
Okay. So let me paraphrase a little bit, and a great question, by the way, and keep them coming. So, perhaps Google does a global cohort model with the, you know, massive hordes of new SREs yearning to be formed. How do you like that for paraphrase? and that's in fact what we're going towards, but there are lots of things that you can do, that we'll be going over here in short order that, regardless of your size, are helpful. And sometimes it's more about the diligence, even in the team of existing folks. And it just becomes not an edge case, but a supplementary case when you happen to have someone who's new. So part of what we'll talk about here is making sure that the opportunities for learning are cater to people of different backgrounds and different amounts of tenure on a team. So keep me honest to that. Cool. Thanks, Ben. Any other questions before we continue? Okay, cool. Let's do this. So one, concrete sequential learning experiences. Multiple syllable buzzword tip. What? No. Here's what I mean. So go back to that maybe lazy learning experience where you say go into the deep end of the pool. If you have, let's just throw a number out there, like 30 different components or concepts that you have to learn about in your stack, go to it in random order. I'm sure it'll be fine, right? Not so much. Or better yet, here's the really fun one. you waddle up to the trough of tickets and operations work that maybe your team has collected, and they just say, start working on some tickets in random order. You know what's really demoralizing? Doing something like, I'm going to work on this thing for a couple of hours that would have taken one of my senior colleagues like 5 or 10 minutes to do. And when it's done, I'll have learned two things. And now I'm going to go to the next ticket. Oh, look, I have to go learn this other complete thing over here. I'll be right back. And pretty soon, you're wandering all over the universe And every single time you open that next ticket, as put yourself in the nuclear, in the newbie's shoes, excuse me. It's, I have to start all over again. When is this going to start making sense? Hence the I know Kung Fu joke, where eventually you just, like, it all snaps together. That is so unfair to the newbie. Think about your stack. Just a simple enough exercise should be to grab a whiteboard somewhere, they're in ample supply here in Silicon Valley, and elsewhere, and draw out your diagram of your stack. What talks to what? You could make it extra gratuitous, and then maybe it's not helpful, but find the right balance. What does our system look like? Do this as a seasoned veteran on your team. Maybe you're doing a user-facing serving stack. Maybe you're doing some sort of high throughput or high bandwidth pipeline. Maybe you're doing some sort of back-end system that where your customers are internal to your own company. Whatever the case may be, where do the RPCs come in or go to? Where do the queries start? Where does the money flow? Spice, whatever it is. Consider the tour through the system, and then maybe suggest to your newbies, here are some things you should start out with. So that of the, to this hypothetical, like 30 things you might need to learn, imagine how much less time it might take if instead of doing things in random order, you do them in a cumulative, concrete, sequential, as the education nerds might say, sort of basis. It helps everyone say, hey, I learned this and I can learn more. Look at the progress I'm making to my previous comments about knowing where you are at. It is such a better experience. In one way, you might consider, for example, designing out some learning paths and saying, learn this and then this and then this. Or, but you might say, well, wait a second, Andrew, but those 30 things or those 60 things or those 5 things, they change too fast. We can't have, you're suggesting documentation on how to learn? Well, it doesn't necessarily need to be as formal as that, although if you get your whole team to embrace it and you have knowledge experts for each of those components, they can help with this. It can even just be as simple as some subtle redirection. Think of yourself as a load balancer. That's kind of awkward. No, think of yourself as the newbie wanders by and they're like, okay, I could learn one of these 5 things. Oh, do that one first. Or you should probably wait to do this one until you learn these other 3. Just little changes like that can drastically, drastically speed up their learning and retention. Okay? So random access sort, not so bad. I mean, very bad, actually. Sequential, good. So ultimately, I reduce this to one cheesy thing. I say power-ups. Right? We have at Google, depending on which team you're on, a series of, I'm not going to say checklists. How many people have read the checklist manifesto? Okay. I'm not going to say checklists. We're not robots executing Turing complete instruction. But so what I do say, though, is remember back to my comments about trust. Rather than just dumping someone into complete ownership of the service, say, okay, learn these couple of things, and then we'll add you into this next group, which will allow you to learn these next several things. And by the time you complete the whole thing, guess what? You're in the on-call group. Go. Push. Right? Power-ups. Think about the order in which people learn some things, and then they can learn everything else in the order that they want to. But get the fundamentals plumbed through. Okay? Cool. Now, for this next one, whether your new SRE hire is fresh out of college, or they're a grizzled IT veteran, or they've been a super software engineer, this SRE thing will be new to them. There will be parts that they will need to shift and adapt to. So we're not just here to create awesome scientists and engineers who happen to be doing production-facing work. We're also here to create excellent reverse engineers. So, like I said, I teach this class called How to Reverse Engineer a Production Service that you've never seen before. If you have the principle and wherewithal and the architectures of your system are such that there's reuse, that there are commonalities in the system, that's already a way to accelerate things. Here is the lay of the land. Here are some things that you've seen, and here are ways that they are duplicated throughout the system. Okay, now here are the differences. Or better yet, here are 5 of them, but I'm not going to show you the other 2, and then I'll wait a little bit. You learn something else. Hey, take a look at this 6th or 7th thing. What's different? What's the same? Where does your intuition take you, right? It's like our dear friend Stephen Colbert says, thinking with your gut, right? If you get paged, you have an escalation that occurs, and this massive decision tree unfurls in front of you of all of the things you could do, everything from have you tried rebooting it to notify the shareholders, we're effed, or whatever, all of the different options, right? You're not going to do all of them at once. There's not enough time in the day. It'll be 50 years until you try every single possible last thing, right? But you need to effectively prune and prioritize this decision tree as quickly as possible when you're in this reactive, on-call handling sort of sense. So knowing what is likely benign, knowing how to hypothesize about and how to test and negatively assert that whole parts of your decision tree are in fact a waste of time or shouldn't be followed is important. And a lot of being able to do that involves grappling with systems that may be outside of your purview, grappling with systems that have changed since you last looked at them, because clearly you're up to date except you aren't. And being able to get into that sort of improvisational thinking is, I think, a key critical hallmark of SREs, along with, of course, you know, analytical thinking, statistical thinking, and so forth. But starting from the very beginning with you are going to have to put out fires that you have never seen before is an ideal to mentally prepare people for the experience. So consider doing tours and walkthroughs of your stack or related ones, right? Don't, if there are multiple products or services or stacks in your within the overall SRE organization's purview, don't hyper-specialize yourself to only one and then say, we're not going to show you the rest, right? Allow that curiosity to define the difference between the home team that your SREs are on and other SRE teams if you have that size of organization. Okay? Cool. All right. Ultimately, you want the newbie to be able to say, when they go on call, I haven't seen this thing before, I've got this. That's kind of the deal there. Okay, so I'm sure you've all been beaten over the head about 5 bajillion times by now with people using the phrase blameless postmortems, right? You know, postmortems are a celebration of failure. They're kind of like fanfic for disasters, right? Okay, this is good, but it's not set and forget. I mean, there's lots of different reasons why you want to have postmortems, right? You know, you're going to encode and learn what exactly happened, how do we get into this mess, what went well, what can we do for next time, right? Like, we touched a hot stove, and that was bad, and now we have blisters, these are the bugs that we got, and next time, when the next disaster happens, we're going to touch a different stove with a different hand, and it's going to be cool, we're going to find different failures, right? That's all good about postmortems, but consider the fact that you may have newbies as yet to be hired that might have been like, oh, if only I was here 2 months earlier when this colossal failure happened, right? Because that's cool, right? You want to be able to give them the front row seat. So consider not only writing postmortems and not squirreling them away somewhere where no one can see them, but collecting them, collecting ones from your team, collecting ones from other teams that may or may not have SRE support. Find the teachable postmortems. You know, I think people have been murmuring a bit about starting their own postmortem reading clubs, postmortem of the month club, what have you, right? And I think that's very cool. That's the kind of thing that one of my sister teams does and is very valuable. But make time for the newbies and say, you should read these things and tell me what you think is cool or what do you think went wrong here? Is there some subtext that was not encoded in these postmortems? And let's root this out. Let's discuss this. So celebrate postmortems. Celebrate's probably not the right word, but like totally geek out over postmortems. Yeah. The way I kind of liken it to is if there's an awesome TV show that you got to watch live, you can send your newbies through the reruns, and they can watch it all over again. Okay? Now, another thing. I'm sure you've also, you know, we keep saying at Google, like, we've got this DIRT thing, this disaster recovery training annual thing. I'm not going to talk about that. What I am going to talk about is a lot of high-performing SRE teams at Google do weekly group kind of tabletop RPG-esque. I can't use anything with a trademark, so keep me honest here. Tabletop RPG-style disaster role-playing, thought experiments. So you'll find that a bunch of people from an SRE team will lumber into a room, and it'll be everyone from little Johnny newbie to, you know, grizzled veteran Sally, who everyone in the room is there because it's really fun to go to this thing. And what is this thing that I'm talking about? Some teams call it Wheel of Misfortune, or Walk the Plank, or Tales of Fail, or what have you. But the thought is, you have a, what's the non-copyrighted term? Game master, yes? A game master who is perhaps someone who's senior on your team, who has seen different types of failure, may have remembered failures from years ago that other people have forgotten, or maybe they've been rooting through your postmortem collection that you are clearly going to have, yes? Yep. And they're looking for things to either replay or new hypotheticals for ways that your system can break. This is fascinating to the types of personalities that like this. This is pure gold and they love doing this. This is, let me think about this thing that I'm on call for and how can I break it in a way that is teachable, in a way that is learnable, something that everyone else will eventually, through the different paths that they take, be able to find the nugget of brokenness, the root cause, and save the day. Everyone wants to be the hero, right? So, but what's cool about these sorts of things is they're the great equalizer. Of the things I've mentioned so far, I've been talking about newbie this, newbie that. But this is something that's really for everyone. And I think this, out of all of the tips, is kind of where it starts. Consider that everyone in the room has a different problem-solving style. Everyone in this room certainly does. And you can learn something from hearing other people reason out loud with how they solve problems. Some people go straight for the throat. Let's drain the cluster. Let's do the logs analysis. Let's look at the secondly, latency 90th percentile, this or that. Oh, I think it's probably a DOS attack. I think it's that. Or other people, take a little bit more of a big picture approach. Again, going back to that decision tree that's unfurling. People will look in different places. This is why you are in the trenches with your fellow on-callers, because they compliment you, believe it or not. I mean, maybe not literally compliment you. You're doing great up here, Andrew. No. But the whole point is, if you do this on, say, like a weekly or every other week sort of basis, often the game master might say something like, okay, who wants to be primary and secondary on call for our service for today's role-playing exercise? Ooh, ooh, me. Yes, you, newbie. Yes, you, oldbie. Okay, come on up here. You're primary and secondary. The page you get is excessive 500s in Asia. What do you do? So it's like every RPG, it's like you're in a maze of twisty little passages. SRE Zork, right? And you have to figure out what's going on. But the cool thing is, imagine that you are a experienced person on the team. Maybe today's disaster scenario is about this thing that is about to launch. Welcome to the future, it's 6 months out, and this new feature that we've launched, it's breaking, what do you do? Or maybe it's about some tried and true fundamental system that you use, but it turns out there's this bad failure mode that we haven't thought about in 2 years. It's all up to the game master, if you will, to decide what's going to play out. But if you put yourself in the newbie's shoes for a moment, on day zero, if the first day after they get out of HR orientation is like, hey, come on over to this crazy thing we do called Wheel of Misfortune, and like everyone, it feels like they're talking reject Star Trek convention terms past them. Or it's like you're going to a Shakespearean play in the first 10 minutes and you're like, what are they saying, right? All these code words, all these systems that you haven't heard about before or how they're used at this company. But then you fast forward a couple of weeks, a couple of months, and now the newbie is saying like, I've heard of these things before and I can see how this is playing out. Or maybe even they're thinking in their minds, huh, if I had been the person who was picked to be the victim, volunteer, for today's Wheel of Misfortune, I think I would have nailed this one. That encourages a lot of stuff. And yet at the same time, the experienced veteran SREs can save face in the back of the room and go, crap, I didn't know how to solve that either. I guess I should probably pay more attention. Right? It's the great equalizer, and I think that's very important. And you'll find that people will eventually say things like, can I be the game master? I've got this really cool idea. Can I try this one out? And get some really good stuff. Okay. But that's like a thought experiment. Like, you open the door and you see this vast maze in front of you. What do you do? Which monitoring console do you look at? Did that actually happen in Asia? Which thing would you click on, right? That's all abstract. But you also need to do things very hands-on. Ultimately, as educational theory tells us, it's about retention. And if you just speak of things in vagaries, it's not going to stick. And when you have retention, when things stick, you get to your educational goals faster, like, for example, going on call. So you also need to take the time to break real things and break things on behalf of your newbies or your oldbies and have them fix real things with the same monitoring that you use in production, with the same tools that you use in production, maybe even on the actual user-facing cluster with the load balancers tweaked. I don't recommend actually breaking real user traffic too often. But I'll tell you this. So, like, for example, in search SRE at Google, just before our newbies go on call, we run a series of exercises where we literally take one of our clusters, maybe halfway around the world because it's in everyone except for Insomniacs isn't using the cluster in that region. So we'll drain the cluster out and we'll do some elaborate different types of breakages. And then we'll run synthetic load that's pretty close to real user traffic through the cluster, lighting it up just like it normally would. And we'll let that bake for a little bit. And then we'll do something crazy. Like, by the way, if you ever come work for my team and you've heard me say this, you have to tell me that, like, I've heard the answer to the solution, Andrew, okay? But, we'll simulate some, like, horrible hardware isolation problem with some adversarial job that gets co-scheduled, right? And we'll basically play Hunt the Wumpus. I mean, we'll play find the sticky system parts and root out the badness and save the cluster from its high broken latency. Or we'll misconfigure a cluster and simulate what happens when we turn something up for the first time, but we didn't finish the work. What's broken here? One of your colleagues dropped the ball, right? And it's fascinating to see the realizations that people have when it's no longer abstract, when it's very concrete. And far and above, out of all of the exercises that we do over the arc of newbiness for people in our group, that is some of the highest rated exercises by far, because people really appreciate the fact that this isn't the, when they see this sort of brokenness, it's not just because it's their first page. They've seen it before in this relatively safe but still fun kind of environment. So you might say, well, wait a second, I only have a singly home service. It can never be drained. I can't do this. Well, I mean, is there a dev or staging environment? Is there a QA environment? Is there a miniature cluster version of what you're trying to do? At the very least, start there. And if you get to a point where you have the defense in depth, you have the principled and practiced OPER provisioning of your stack, if your stack can be sharded by geography or location, what have you, you know, cough one of those up and use it for exercise, because it turns out that there's a cost to not training your newbies, and you should spend that money wisely. Plus, it's really fun to be the person breaking stuff behind the scenes, if you get it right the first time. Anyway, ultimately, it builds character. For everyone involved, it turns out. Okay, another one. Ride shotgun as much as possible. He just said the word shotgun. What is he talking about? You know what riding shotgun is, right? It's you sit in the passenger seat with the... Never mind. Anyway. So, someone is on call for your service right now. Actually, it's me. I have to go. But if you've got a bunch of newbies, or even some people who are just, you know, also in the on-call rotation but are curious, tee the pager, you know, clone the incoming alerts and send them maybe just something casual like during business hours or only certain times of the day to your newbies so that they also get the jump on things. I mean, maybe not literally the jump, although that sometimes happens. Ah, I got paged. But give them the opportunity to get that first crack at the problem. And at first, they might just say, I have no idea what this means. Later, it may be, well, I also dug into this. I didn't fix anything because you as the primary on-caller, you're actually the one calling the shots. But I got as far as I could before you beat me to it, right? Give them a taste of the action as early as possible. And then, if you are the on-caller who has handled the incident for the day, and maybe you're writing up a postmortem because of revenue loss or this or that, spend some time with the newbie to ask them questions about what happened. What did you look at first? Did you notice this issue over here? Consider the following thing that disproves the assertion you've made to me, but I will say it to you politely so that you don't think I'm a jerk. Oh, cool, right? Like, all of those sorts of things. You know, get that sense of understanding, and it's also that it goes back to trust, right? The more data you get about your newbies and how they adapt to the same problems that you had to deal with, you ultimately, at the end of the day, whether you consciously or unconsciously know this, you want to know that if you get hit by a bus, that your coworkers can do as good of a job as you did. And you get to see more and more of that the earlier you give people an opportunity to take a parallel crack at the task. Eventually, you know, some teams will eventually just say, okay, newbie, you're now not a newbie, you are on call. Others will say, I'll reverse shadow you. You've been shadowing me all of this time, but now I'll ride shotgun. And the moment you flinch, if you flinch, and I don't think you will, but you might, tap out and I'll take care of it. But you're the one running the commands until you tell me otherwise. Anyway, ride shotgun as much as possible so that the newbies get the front row seat to the fireworks. Cool? And for the last tip that I have, the best education is continuous education. So what do I mean by this? It's all good to do these disaster role-playing things, to create good reverse engineers, to create these learning paths. But if it's not systemic in your team, it won't stick. The nice thing about upcoming launches on your stack is that both the newest and the oldest person on the team are probably as equally inexperienced with something they've never seen before. Unless, of course, there's someone on your team who's liaising with the dev team that's creating the feature, of course. But aside from that person, everyone else is chomping at the bit to learn how this thing works. So come up with excuses to hang out with your dev team that's developing these features. Have a monthly talk about what's cool and what's new. record a video of it. Make that available so that the people who come in, who have been hired in the next year, can watch those videos while they're also taking a look at those postmortems that you've collected, right? Definitely do that, and also do the reverse. Dev SRE relations are of varying types at various companies, but also tell your devs about the cool things that you're working on, or the sorts of classes of outages that you've had recently, or the system designs, patterns and anti-patterns you've seen that have stood the test of time in your guarding of the stack, right? This works both ways, and in either case, your newbies can totally tag along on either of these things. We call them study sessions in my group, and we have a compendium of, we have a video a week of someone from a dev or SRE side talking about a cool, interesting thing to learn about, going back years and years and years. And we only delete the ones that have been obsoleted by new ones, which is a lot of them. But when you get into that sort of mode where you say, man, I can't wait till next Thursday when Wheel of Misfortune happens. I wonder what they're going to break, what they're going to theoretically break next. And then after that, I get to go to the study session on this cool new thing that's launching. That's when you know you've kind of won. You can understand a lot more about your team, and you feel a lot more involved in the rate of change, which is something as SRE we have to get used to. Let me just close with two comments here. So the ugly phrase that people often say is those that can do and those that can't teach. And that's only said by people who've never had a teacher in their family, right? The unspoken absolute necessity and truth of SRE is that if you are working on a large-scale system, the growth of the system happens a lot in machines. You need to figure out ways to make your system design scale in terms of machines, in terms of resources. But more importantly, what people often forget is you have to scale your humans faster than you scale your machines. If you're going to build this ginormous robot army, and you need to be able to do more with less, or better yet, even more with slightly more humans, you need to scale those humans. So those who can do and teach, right? Some of the best way to convince yourself that, yeah, I really do understand all of this stuff, is to maybe be in front of a bunch of people who have questions, right? And then you could say, yep, that worked out. Or better yet, you learn a lot from how other people learn. So anyway, that is something to consider there. Do we have some more questions from folks about this? We have a gentleman up here up front who has a question.
Hi, my name is Ivan. I work for Tango.
Hey, Ivan from Tango.
Can you talk a little bit more about how you started compiling the actual curricula and documentation for the Google Teams, and whether that, in smaller environments, does that burden potentially fall on the newbies that can reverse engineer and actually come up with this base, or does that move forward kind of backwards to SWEs and things like that?
So questions about how did your curriculum evolve over time? How do you gather that? Where does the burden or the benefit lie? Of course, it all depends. Everything is situational. But what we have found is there are interesting commonalities. And by the way, we're going to have a panel on education coming up in the next slot in the other room, where you'll get to hear this perspective, not only from myself as a Googler, but from our friends from other companies as well. So you'll want to ask this question there too. But for us, there's a couple of different things. You've heard me kind of mention three buckets before, like user-facing stacks, pipelining things, more back-end infrastructure. Controlling for clustering for maybe those three things, we found that there are a lot of commonalities. Teaching to the common things first works very well. And what we found is when you have domain experts in each of those fields, if they say, hey, I could teach something, people just show up. We try to make, it turns out like we're a search company, or we're still kind of a search company. And so we make all of our classes, all of our offerings searchable. And so we've never had a problem of putting butts into chairs for classes. In fact, interestingly enough, we found that when we offer our own classes in-house from SRE to SRE, that the software developers that we work with, and even the ones we don't work with, just show up and like fill the halls. And they're like, we'd like to learn too. So as far as the curriculum design itself goes, starting from that whole, like, where does a query flow through? Starting from there is a good place, I think, to certainly start. You can also outsource and delegate things to some of the developer teams. For example, I worked recently with a fledgling SRE team that has like 70 developers and like 5 relatively junior SRE. And the dynamic there is perhaps the opposite of what I'm used to. It's more like the SWEs being like, this is how it's going to go. And we've got this crazy contraption over here and you're going to like it, right? And so I went to the developers and I said, look, you know, only you can help train the next put out forest fires. Only you can help create the next wave of SREs, and they're going to need to work with you, and in some cases tell you no. Have you heard no from your SRE teams anytime recently? They're like, no. I said, look, come in here, help me figure out how we can bootstrap the next set of folks. Give a talk. We'll make a recording. It'll last for a year because that's probably the most we can expect before your video becomes laughable and obsolete. And you can use it for your newbies as well, software engineers. And they were like, I guess that is right. I'm like, wouldn't you like someone who's able to help faster, better, more, sooner? They're like, oh yeah, that actually sounds like a great idea. So in some cases, going to the different development teams and figuring out what they're up to, how their things plug into each other, and then getting them to do the work can be just as interesting. And yet, there's another team very much like this that I worked with 2 years ago. And this year, in their annual learning conference that I've helped set up, as a point of pride, they said almost all of our classes were taught in-house by our SREs, and the dev newbies came to us because we're the breadth experts. By necessity, they have to talk to several dev teams, so they have the bigger picture. And I was just like, yes. Right. At the end of the day, what you want is hands-on training in systems that have that are in the critical path of your experience for whatever class of users and people are making use of the thing that you're on call for. And if you start there, everything else, as you work backwards and you look at the bigger picture, is icing on the cake. But starting with query flows, what breaks often, tour of the monitoring, reverse engineering related services, how does load balancing or disaster conditions affect your stack, what does it mean to be a good on-caller culturally at your company is a great topic. That's the failure in you class that Jan and I teach. All of those sorts of things are a core that you can work up from. Thank you for that. Okay, and we have two questions over here. Yes, hi.
Hi, I'm Amy from Dropbox.
Hi, nice to meet you.
I'm new to the field of SRE, and I joined a team that's also being spun up and is new. And I was wondering if you have any tips for me on how I can get up to speed faster, given that we don't have the systems in place to yet do this kind of thing.
Okay, so you're new to SRE, and you want to get up to speed faster.
Right.
Okay, so here's a great exercise, one that I often make homework for the students of my reverse engineering class. I'll say, look, find a senior SRE on your team, and go to them and say something like, any senior SRE worth their salt, if you come to them and you ask the following question, they will say, yes, I would like to do this yesterday. You say to them, I'm going to go try to figure out the connectivity in my service. I'm going to go try to draw a picture. And it's probably going to be wrong. I'd like you to help validate that for me. Right? Don't give me the big picture. Let me try to draw this together. Show me a couple of tools for how I can investigate those connections, but then let me fill this in. And that senior SRE is going to go, of course, I will help you get the right picture. But what they're probably thinking is, sweet, they're going to go find the things that are buried under several layers of blankets and carpets that I haven't noticed just yet. Yes, I would love to help. Do that with that person, but I would also encourage you insidiously to ask the same thing of a completely orthogonal person on the team. And don't let them know. And play them off of each other. This is just the way I would do it, right? And then validate everyone's diagrams at the end. Oh, I also talked to this other person over here, and I talked to this person. What do we think? Does this actually form something? I think that's a particularly interesting thing too. Another fun thing to do, for my definition of fun anyway, is documentation is most useful for those that need to read it. But the latent fear of documentation being incorrect is the thing that bothers people who already know the content. So something that we'll do in an annual learning summit we do in search is we have this kind of not quite checklist of things you might want to learn before you go on call, the power-ups. And so what I do every year is I kind of chop it up into segments and I sort it mentally by which things are most up-to-date and least up-to-date. And then I go to each of the newbies. I roughly have the same number of buckets as I do number of newbies. And I say, you're going to be in charge of rewriting this documentation. But that seems like then all of the senior people go, what, you're letting the newbies rewrite everything? That seems like a bad idea. I go, no, it's okay, because I'm pairing each one of you up with the newbie. And they're going to come to you and say, I think from these classes and from my investigations that this is more correct. And that person's going to go, no, that's all wrong. Or that's actually, that's kind of correct, cool, or whatever. So consider also finding a piece of mediocre documentation, working with someone on your team to improve it as an exercise. And it's also a great way to fast track yourself to becoming a domain expert about something that was clearly only moderately to fully unloved. I think that can be quite fun. Does that help?
Yeah.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. We'll take another question here. And there's a question over here, I think, maybe if someone wants to ask, they can come up here. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, my name is Jason from Tango.
Would you mind speaking a little closer to the mic?
Yeah, my name is Jason from Tango.
Hey.
I appreciate the talk about the concerns for new hires.
Yes.
And the question I have is, what do you do to encourage and nurture SREs to identify opportunities that extract services that require scalability? You know, for example, the PYMK, which is kind of a commodity across social infrastructure, and what is the life cycle for that? For example, adding more servers, bringing in external vendors.
Okay, give me the first half of the question one more time. So you want opportunities where...
So you, as an SRE, you're fixing stuff, and you're really concerned about the infrastructure, and you're developing, you know, cutting-edge infrastructure that isn't already a commodity out there with Oracle or IBM or some
sure,
vendor.
Sure, it's custom, yeah.
It's custom. So you have the talent, right? But then the question is, how do you help them take a step back and look at the opportunity to be able to extract those services, those APIs, and build first maybe internal more servers or add scalability internally, or even bring in an external vendor?
Okay, so thank you for asking this. It's a bit of a long question, so I'm going to do my best, but keep me honest if I'm not answering exactly what you're looking for. So you have some maybe proprietary or advanced technology that is not common. You want to, by extract, you mean generalize it, or do you mean make it known to the people who don't know about the technology?
Yeah, so the specific example, just to make it maybe a little bit more
sure.
visible, is that the PYMK, the people you may know, it's a known service in the social space at LinkedIn, at Google, at Facebook. That's very similar. It's almost at a point, I think, where it could be commoditized. So the question is, maybe not just adding more services and make it scalable, but possibly bring in a vendor to create a box or a commoditized service.
Okay, and the educational aspect of this is?
So just letting the SREs know, you know, this module aligns with our business objectives for growth, and we'd like to scale it out more, so maybe even smaller companies could reuse it and bring in possibly an external vendor to build the box.
Okay, so when you're dealing with a technology that is small by percentage of uptake in a company and you want to increase it, this is where I'm going to go with this first. It turns out that in many cases it's more of a social and interpersonal challenge than it is a technical one. You want to lay out the base case for why things are similar or why they will be similar or better. But I'm sorry, I'm still not quite fully understanding the question. So we can follow up afterwards, certainly, and I want to make sure that I do right by your question. Thank you. And I think for the interest of time, we can take maybe, what's our drop dead time? Like 2:30 to 2:25? Okay, so we can take, I'd say, two more questions here, and then I'll just have some closing comments. Hi, what's your name?
Hi, my name is Jess. I'm from Taos.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit more about sharpening troubleshooting skills. I really love the role-playing idea. That's great. But, you know, what if you're on a small team, one or two people? What can you do there?
Sure. So if you're on a small team, how can you sharpen your diagnostic and troubleshooting skills? Well, okay, so let me first talk about a trap that many of us fall into and what not to do. So it's very, very tempting to overanalyze a system that doesn't have many problems with it. And so what you don't want to do is get in a situation where you're inventing things that just are farcical or couldn't possibly happen. You do want to keep a sense of realism. If you have a very small team, from where I sit, you know, that would be two or three people, then sometimes doing more of the riding shotgun is perhaps the best thing as a first basis. I would start there. But there are other things to consider as well, like on a more of a one-on-one basis, playing the which of these things is not like the other game. Focusing your statistical and differential analysis kind of skills, right? What are the common things? What are the different things about maybe two copies of the stack? Or considering setting up variations on your software that serve different needs and comparing their merits from a performance basis. So, for example, we have an exercise that we do, even if it's just one-on-one with another person. We have a game we play called How to Burn a Web Search Cluster to the Ground. We do this, and what we'll do is we'll take the different levels of our, different tiers of our stack in isolation, again, under load, and we'll shoot of the hundreds or tens of replicas of each job set, we'll reduce them until they pop. right? And we'll take a look at the reasoning. We'll take a look at the monitoring and say, like, how's our latency doing? How's our CPU pressure? How's our ability of our system to yield and come back in a fixed amount of time? Oh, it's getting slower. These various sorts of performance metrics. And then we'll reason through, why are these things behaving the way they are? Are there other unintended consequences in the stack? So there, you're basically cruising for a bruising, right? But it's fascinating. And every time I've run an exercise like this, whether it's with a group of 10 people or with a group of one person, there are things I learn about our stack and the way the behavior has changed. So I'm not saying play whack-a-mole with the stack, but play whack-a-mole with the stack. And I think that's a great way to learn too. Especially if you don't explain how you are breaking the stack at first, and then later you give the rationale, here's what I did, here's the job that I actually killed. Which job do you think that I killed? That can all be good. Does that answer a part of your question?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, you bet. We could potentially take, I think, up to one more question. Otherwise, I'll take some parting shots. Okay. So I'd just like to say thanks again to everyone for coming out for this. This is a lot of fun, and I look forward to hearing more at next SREcon. Come find me and tell me about how you've improved the state of education in your team. With that, two things to keep in mind. There's an Educating SRE panel that's coming up next in the Cypress Room with our friends from Dropbox and Facebook and Matterport. And also, for funsies, at 3:45, I'll be giving a tale of fail about the day the Google search went haywire and what I, as the on-call SRE, got to do about it. And that's at our booth at 3:45. So thanks again to everyone for coming out.